Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to
Mind Body Stuff.
I'm Kaylee.
I'm Bernice.
Today, we are so excited to have, Dana, I don't even know how to introduce you, actually, because there are so many ways we could introduce you. But just honestly, you are a friend. You've become a good friend over the past year and fellow Ulican. And just such an incredible woman that we are so excited to have on this podcast and to chat with, right, B?
Oh my gosh, so excited and so honored. We're just lucky you fell into the Ula community when you did.
Aw, thanks. I'm so excited to be here and honestly so honored to be part of the community and also be friends with both of you. That means the world to me.
Aw. Well, it's funny because we, you know, we obviously we need to introduce you. And so I was just like, okay, well, wait a minute. Let me totally understand who Dana is, because Dana, it's incredible and insane how much you've done in your life and how much impactful work. And, you know, it's so easy for me just to think of you as like, as a friend. And then I go and I look and I just am reminded by all the incredible things that you've done. I mean, you're an author, you are a CEO, you are so many things. Will you just in your words, not that what you do is who you are, but will you just introduce a little bit about your background?
Sure. And, you know, it's funny because when we talked last, you mentioned this, and I tend to forget those things about myself, believe it or not. I think of myself first as a grandma and a mom. And yeah, I've been really fortunate, not to discredit my own contribution to that, but to do the things that I have done. It's not like I set out to be a CEO, or I think I always wanted to be an author because I am a writer at heart. I was educated as a writer, but yes, I spent, 16 years at Hewlett Packard. And that was a great foundation for my career. I've spent most of it in marketing and advertising and then left the big corporate world and went out and worked with smaller organizations. I've worked for Twitter. And not that that's a smaller organization.
I know, I'm like, oh,
very small organization. Or Twitter was called Twitter.
Yeah. So I mean, my career has been, I've been really fortunate to wander and wander into the next thing and really shoot for the stars. And, you know, I think a lot of that's through hard work and commitment on my part to just power through and be resilient. And we'll talk a little bit about that, I'm sure. But yeah, I'm an advisor, a board member. And I am, you know, last 2 years really deeply involved with ULA. It's become a huge part of my life and probably saved me at a certain point. So, yeah.
Well, when this podcast comes out, it's going to be part of our I Am Worthy campaign. And when Kaylee said we were going to be interviewing you, I was just so excited because I was like, this really fits into the concept that Kaylee had been talking about I am worthy and about like the idea of a diamond growing stronger with pressure. And I love how you talked, Dana, about right in the beginning here, about how you've sort of meandered your way down your career path. That sounds like things have kind of opened up for you along the way as you've, you know, travel down this line of your life.
For sure. And certainly experienced a number of hardships. There's a whole portion of my life that you all don't know about, you know, losing my first husband when my kids were really, really little, that really, I think, made my career choices smaller in the beginning of my career. It's probably one of the reasons I stayed at Hewlett Packard for so long is because I felt like I needed to put them first. And having that security of HP was really important to me, where I couldn't leave and go to a startup or couldn't go do something more risky, or I didn't feel like I could anyway at the time. But you're right. I mean, I think through great pain and great hardship, you know, something else comes out of it. You might not be able to see that at the moment and at the time, but certainly later you can reflect back and say, I wouldn't have done that, or this wouldn't have happened this way without those other difficulties.
So I just want to talk a little bit about how we met you. And now I'm kind of in like the beginning details feel a little bit blurry to me, but basically you had just sent me a Facebook message offering up help just because Ula had meant a lot to you. And so you were just wondering if we could use any help. And then we said, yes, absolutely. And then we got to work with you in the whole redesign of the Ula marketing and brand. And we had such incredible conversations about who we are and, you know, how we want to show up and serve through Ula. And it's just been, it's just been like, I mean, you single-handedly, Dana, are, I think, what has like projected us on this new path that we're really excited to be on. So I just need to say thank you to you for that.
I am so glad that I could help. I mean, like I was truly at that moment where I could reflect back, having gone through the pain, and said Ula was so instrumental. And I want so many more people to know about it because I think it is so incredible. And I think it's what people need right now. And so anything that I could do to help get the word out and get it to other people. And I really wanted to connect with both of you because, as you all know, in this strange time when we're connecting behind the screen, you feel like, I'm sure it's odd to you both. I think there's a number of people that probably feel like they know you, but you've never met, or you don't even, you know, they're out there.
Yeah.
So I just reached out because, like I say, I you know, it's part of, I think, important to me to give back and to give to others and to make a difference in as any way that I can. So thank you. I it's important to me that it has made a difference and
totally.
I want to see the world embrace Ula.
Well, we met you at a very pivotal time. Like this time has been for many people in terms of transition and shock and everything that's happened. And just meeting with you and talking with you gave, I think, both Kaylee and I better perspective about, you know, what we were doing and why we were doing it and where Ula needed to go, you know, as an entity. So you really, even going back to the I am worthy concept, you made Ula for me understand more that Ula is worthy. I guess that's the crux of that, you know?
Yeah.
That's
and
huge.
It's hard during this time. I mean, it's hard. I mean, like I say, we're all so disconnected. And Ula is such about connection.
Yeah. And so it's really interesting because normally, you know, if you look at your, you know, like your quote unquote, I guess not resume, but just your about on your website. I mean, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe we're even talking to you. Like, I can't believe that you would even want to talk to us. It's really, really incredible the career that you've had. But like, it's interesting for me too, because I've actually never, ever worked in corporate anything. I've just never had that experience. And to be honest, I was thinking about this too, a little bit more. I've never really even worked with men. I basically only have worked in careers where it's very, very female centric. And so part of your story really has to do with that living and working in that corporate environment, right?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
My whole career is really that. And obviously one of my books was written for women who live in that systematic environment where men are still largely the leaders. And so the style, the approach, the systems are all set up with that in mind. And while there are a lot of subtleties that we don't talk about as women rise in leadership and they face these barriers. So that definitely has been a mission. And then more recently, my current mission, having lived in the corporate environment, has been just through the rise of first the industrial age and then with technology, this systematic, what would I say, suppression, I guess, of letting us feel our emotions in the workplace. So we reward, and all the systems for rewards are about our rational thinking, not about our emotional thinking. But as we move into this next phase, and corporations are, I think, really struggling with this and wanting to create inclusive environments, you can't create an environment where everyone feels like they belong, which ultimately should be the definition of inclusivity, without really being in touch with your own emotions and with those around you. And so, you know, those have been my most recent, I would say, missions, in addition to just all the rational work that I do related to being a company leader or a company director.
Well, I love that part that you're talking about, because I think so many people in their lives, particularly women, I don't want to generalize, but I will, that universal loss of self as we travel down our career lines or our whatever we've set out for ourselves. I think a lot of times ULA really ties into women connecting back to their emotions, connecting back to perhaps the person they were before, or perhaps the person they want to be. And so I love that part of your story, Dana, where you you have this kind of falling apart of your career and your marriage, and how you kind of come back full circle in that falling apart and then finding yourself again. I'd love if you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. That is exactly why, you know, How Awakened at Work became how it came to be. And ULA was a big part of that. So in 2019, the early part of 2019, I was fired from my job as CEO of a private equity backed company, a company that was really had a lot of difficulties. It was in trouble. And so I knew it was going to be a big challenge, but ultimately, the owners and myself came to disagree on, you know, what it was going to take to get to the other side of that equation. So that was the first time. I've never been fired before, and to me, it felt like a failure. And so I was really grappling with that, just kind of reeling with the pain of it, I would say, and actually reconnecting with that pain. I think part of going through the process of unraveling that journey was a recognition that in my resilience to make it work and to get to the other side and to be successful in that role, I had given up pieces of myself. And they're the pieces that make me strong, the strongest, right? They're the pieces that make me most effective at what I did. And then the latter part of the year, that same year, I think I had been so wrapped up in really dealing with this pain related to my job loss. Then my husband came home one day and said he was leaving too. And, you know, it was just this emotional time that literally, I think reconnecting my emotions was an understatement, because I literally woke up crying. I cried multiple times during the day. I cried during ULA. I cried before I went to bed. You know, it was like, and I needed that. I know that sounds sad, but it's not about sad. It's about, I had just systematically shut down any feelings or emotions in my effort to be successful in that job, literally to the point where I was telling you both with ULA specifically in the beginning. I'm a dancer, I've danced my whole life, but I couldn't make my body do what my brain said it needed to do, even with the choreography, and I could not hear the music. And so I had shut even that part down. I was like locked inside myself. I was even afraid to be free. And so, you know, going on that journey of the pain of my job loss, the pain of my relationship loss, the, you know, and Ula kind of was like the physical manifestation of understanding the, you know, the stuck place where I was, but also helped me get to the other side, because suddenly I was reconnected. I was free to be free and free to be me, which I think is so much of what y'all are trying to do, right? And I mean, the end story is I did get my relationship back. And, you know, and I, you know, I went on this mission to really try to communicate with all employees and all workplaces in terms of, don't allow your employees to shut down. Because I thought of self-reflecting as a leader. I thought, how many times have I set the environment where I gave my people permission to feel their emotions? And how, what can I do to be a change maker in that process?
Wow. Wow. That is so interesting. And that is like, I mean, that story of, yeah, like losing so, like sometimes things just really do have to break so they can be put back together in a better way. And this just totally seems like it's one of those situations. And, you know, systems need to crumble. Old ways of being and doing need to be reformed right now. And it's just cool that, you know, you're teaching different companies how to do this. You're living it yourself. You are a change maker. Do you feel like corporate world like is changing right now? Do you feel that things are shifting, and there's a priority for the full human to show up in the workplace?
I think there are companies that are embracing it. So I recently did a webinar, Awakened at Work webinar, for a company who totally was talking about, and they were in Minneapolis, a good portion of them. And so they had a lot of employees that were people of color who had witnessed the whole George Floyd incident. And being able to break down and have an emotional reflection and communication with one another, and understanding how that really set the stage for building a much closer and inclusive environment where everyone felt like they could bring all of themselves to work. I mean, that's a really evolved conversation, I would say, in the context most companies aren't having that level of conversation. But there are companies who are, and they're recognizing that, you know, emotions aren't bad. They shouldn't be suppressed.
Right.
Lost my voice. But then there are many who absolutely are just talking about quotas. And I think, quite frankly, there's a lot of people who are afraid to be in touch with their own emotions. And so they can't possibly get to the point where they're talking about having an emotional connection with someone else. If you don't know how you feel, how can you connect with someone else? So it's a mix. But I'm very pleased to see at least the openness to have the conversation and the recognition. I think this partly is a COVID conversation too, because culture is not a physical location. It's in the hearts and minds of your people. And a lot of companies really had to grapple with that this last year.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I know. I think that there are many, I mean, not only was it COVID, but it was just, I think for so many Americans, an awakening to the racism that is still so prevalent in the country. There, this year, obviously for so many of us, was so challenging, but I hope, and this is me just being optimistic and being like, there must be a silver lining, right? But I do think it's given so many of us the opportunity to stop just that, like, must keep going, the wheel must keep spinning. Like, it's just very directional. I think when we all had to pause, there has been such an opportunity for hopefully reflection and reform. So I don't know, like it's just, this year has just been so crazy for that, you know, for all the changes and the hardship. But I'm hopeful that there are good things that are coming out of this, like what you're talking about. I mean,
me too.
I don't know. Bea, what do you think?
Well, and I assume that connectivity and overall employee satisfaction and health would give more productivity, would be relatable to more productivity. So I think if we can sell people on the fact that if your people are happy, you're going to end up with higher productivity rates. And I think some corporations may have seen that during this COVID time in a weird way, because a lot of employees could work from home or could manage their work schedule in a different way than was thought before. Like, instead of like, you know, I'm going to be at the office 8 hours a day, it's like, actually, I'm going to work from, you know, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. or whatever it is, or in my own home. So that kind of flexibility for the worker. And then just recognizing that people just don't want to sit in cubicles all day, maybe for, you know, 40 hours a week, it can help them reimagine what these companies are going to look like. I was just talking to someone who works in New York, and they're talking about how they're seeing the work week, and maybe, oh, they're going to be calling it hoteling. So you're not going to have specific offices, you're going to hotel your office. So you'll use your office on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And then someone else will use that office on Thursday and Friday. You can't have personal effects in there, but they're talking about this whole new concept of hoteling. But then, of course, it all goes back to the connectivity to the employee and the emotionality. Is the employee happy? Like, and happiness is all about, is there balance? Are you releasing things you need to release? Are you pulling in things you need to have in you? You know, are you feeling fulfilled in your personal life and in your work life? And that's what happens, is things get out of balance. We sell our souls to certain things, and then we wake up one day and it's like, oh my gosh, I don't even know what it's like to feel like that anymore. We see that in class so many times when new people come to class, just like you were saying, Dana, where they literally, I see them and they're kind of frozen. They're just like, the music starts, I'm like, oh, she's frozen. And then suddenly the music starts going. Maybe you see her a few more times, the participant, and she starts to move her arms. And I'm like, good job. Move your arms. You can move your arms. You got this. But it's that whole understanding that we've even forgotten how to move the body.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I was totally stuck. And I think you're right in terms of this recognition. In fact, I was laughing. I was thinking of Kaylee in the meeting that we had the other day where you were talking about all the tabs that you had open on your laptop.
Oh, yeah.
Some of those were personal tabs. Some of those are professional tabs. You have a much more integrated approach to how you're thinking about work. Isn't something that's completely separate. It's integrated in your life. And yet we've treated them like these separate things. And with the world that we all live within now, we're all 100% connected all the time. We're all integrated. Think of us as moms, you know, how many different hats we're wearing, especially during COVID, you know,
right.
All of us need to be parents and work and everything. And so it needs to be integrated. And, you know, I think even the notion of balance, like Bernice, has evolved. So in the past, it was trying to keep everything equal. And there were so many moms who have come up to me and said, how did you balance everything? Well, I didn't. I mean, it was instead, it's think of how do we consciously make choices? I call it, instead of balance, let's call it centered in a choice. Because today you might have to say, I can't deal with the home stuff today. I have to 100% focus on work today. Tomorrow, right, it might be completely different. I can't deal with work stuff today. I have to 100% focus on home stuff. And as long as you're consciously making the choice and you're not feeling helpless because you become a victim because you aren't making the choice and you're trying to keep everything equal because that's what people are supposed to do, that's where it starts to get out of whack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So Dana, you Would you say you primarily work with women? And I'm asking this just in part because here I'm going to get a little hippie, but this is just how, this is just how I feel about things. So not to generalize, but I guess I don't know how to talk about this without generalizing, but with this more masculine approach to leadership, do you think that this is part of the reason why, you know, it's so much like, how, like, get it done in numbers and projection and, you know, goals and setting them? And so do you feel like in the corporate workplace, at least, a lot of women have tried to fit into this model by trying to be more masculine in energy? Or, you know, I feel like, and then there's like feminine energy that's more like circular, and it's receiving, it's listening, it's just a different type of energy. Do you think that we with part of this awakened at work, it's more of inviting that like feminine energy, or is it more about actually we just need more women leaders, or like what, where do you see all of this going? Like, how do we get to a place where people don't have to like choose, you don't have to have a successful career, but, you know, make all of these different sacrifices, or how do we find this centering like you're talking about in this type of atmosphere?
Yeah, for me, so yes, I don't mind the generalization at all. In fact, I think through the conversation of generalization, we get to the next place. So even Grace Meets Grit, which was my book about gender leadership, is overgeneralized so that we can have the conversation. So the premise is that if you look at the male, generally, style of leadership, not all men. So, you know, even I have some of those qualities, which I call grit in this particular case. They're much more transactional. They're about failure avoidance, and they're about fast decision making, you know, quickly affecting an outcome. If you look at the more female approach, it's much more about relationships and building and maintaining those relationships. It's about collaboration. Women feel, for example, in a decision-making process that it's their obligation to involve others in that process and get their point of view and represent their point of view, whereas men feel it's much more autonomous and about immediate action. And again, neither one of those is right or wrong. So if the building's burning down, God forbid you try collaboration. Just get people out of the building, right? Make an autonomous decision, get people out. If, on the other hand, you're trying to get a whole work team or involved and, you know, to another place and move forward, then collaboration is really important. So how do you best leverage all of those skills? And then obviously not make a decision about someone or their leadership style based on your own point of view. So in part of my failure in dealing with the very male dominated private equity company is I would get feedback like, you don't push back on things. And then I would list all the things that I pushed back on. The real issue is I didn't do it in the way that they were familiar with because they didn't deal with other women CEOs. And if I had done it in the way that men did, I also would have failed. Because I would have been classified the B word. So it's a very difficult line that we walk. And even though I wrote the book on the topic, I couldn't succeed in the role, which is a little scary if you think about it. But I think, again, the path forward is having a more conscious conversation where we talk about this and we don't make assumptions based on our own viewpoints, and that we understand that it's not that one way or the other is right or wrong. It's that actually together we're better because we bring it from a different point of view. That's what inclusivity and diversity is all about, right? And that's true for, I think, this path forward. The reason I wrote Grace Meets Grit is because we weren't having conversations about these things. And we should have conversations. How do we, one of the things I teach is decision-making processes. How do we let our teams know when we're going to make an autonomous decision and we're not involving them versus, gosh, this is so important that a consensus is really the key outcome. And we're going to take the time and energy to actually get to consensus on this decision. Mm-hmm. And just actively communicating that. We never do that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think there is like a balance that needs to be sought here, because like, I know, I mean, I'm just going to be really honest right now, but Ula has had, we've had some problems with relationship almost being too dominant in the workplace, being almost, yes, always like all women. And mm-hmm. then, you know, so I think that it is, there's this balance of, I know at least for myself, as a leader, I think I do have definitely some grit, but I, you know, sometimes relationship may get over prioritized, or it's like, you know, sometimes things can get muddy because there is this, like, I don't know, maybe swing too far in one direction. And uh-huh. so that balance, you know, I think at least for me and maybe other women and women leaders, like you said, I feel like I'm being a bitch if sometimes I'm like, I just need to be, you know, I just need to be a leader right now, or I don't right. like to say boss, but I mean, it, yeah, sometimes I just have to be a boss. And it is really hard. I think women have a really hard time not being considered nice. And as I'm growing older, I'm learning this lesson more and more, but I've been so afraid not to be nice that, you know, sometimes I may have not made the right decision or not handled a situation in a certain way because I was so concerned about not coming off as nice.
Uh-huh. I think that's all really valid, and any too much of anything is a problem potentially.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's even a good thing. You know, too much of a good thing can become a negative.
Right.
It's like we talked about too much resilience. You know, we always talk about resilience being a good thing, but there is a problem in terms of having a leader who has too much resilience. It's that they may persist too long. They may drag their team and have way more resilience than their team does and wear them out.
Right.
So I think balance in anything is a, mm-hmm. is a good thing. And I think the ultimate goal is communication more and being able to, again, if we can communicate and connect on the emotional level, then we can have the conversations that doesn't judge you or put you in a box mm-hmm. by you coming to the table and saying, this is what I need today. Mm-hmm. Or, this is just what I want to say. And I don't want to be judged by what I am saying or how I'm behaving. Now, I also have, I'm a big proponent for emotional accountability though, because mm-hmm. people yeah. who are, emotionally unaccountable and you know, just kind of fly off the handle, aren't trusted. So we all, and that's at all levels, we need to be right. emotionally accountable too, but right. yeah, it's just more open, honest, be real. Life's too short, quite frankly.
Well, I totally agree. I think it's like, you have to understand yourself, you know, where you lie on the grace and grit paradigm perhaps. And you have to understand your employees, the people that work for you, because we're all, I think we of course progress and change, but it's kind of like, I'm just noticing in my own self, I have both qualities. And sometimes my grit comes out like, yeah, that's done. We're done. I don't want to talk about it anymore. You know, it's like the decision's made, we're done. And I can just check that off my list and I don't have to look at it again. And then on the opposite end of being too like, let's all have a, you know, let's all reach the decision together. And sometimes I'm like, it's taking too long. You know, it's like, ah! But then of course, working with employees that are like, I really want to process this for a while. You know, this decision that's been made, or, you know, maybe they lie in a different paradigm on that grace and grit, thing. And so that's why I think, and I'll get back to Ula again. That's why I think Ula is so helpful, because it kind of depends on the person and what they need. I just had this happen in class the other day, and I came in and I was all like, yeah, everything's checked off on my list. I was very like, just revved up. Like, I'm going to take over the world with all this stuff. And then, but I had neglected sort of some personal stuff. And I came in and taught the class. And then partway through, I did a song. And then I just started sobbing. Oh. And then in the sobbing, I realized, you know, I have ignored some, obviously there's some deep emotional feeling here that you have, you're ignoring. And even through the sobbing in the class, it helped me release it. It was like, okay, get in touch with it. You didn't realize you needed to touch base with this. And I think for you, Dana, how Ula played that role in your life, in your kind of personal healing journey.
Totally. I mean, it was, for a while, it was what kept me connected to the ground, basically. Because, you know, I was in such a point of pain, but then also really helping me recognize how locked up that I was, and therefore not in a good space, and how I needed to release myself to become that next phoenix, if you will. And I don't know what would have happened had I continued in that environment where I was so suppressed. I'm sure not good in many ways, not for my family, not for my coworkers, not for my relationship, right. Not for myself.
And that vulnerability, would you say that sort of vulnerability gave you strength?
Yes, and peace. I don't know how to describe the new Dana, but it is different, even in my relationship and how I approach work. In I think the other journey that I went on is really recognizing that I had this deep-seated insecurity that I've always known about. And it was holding me back. I just needed to release that too. And in doing so, I don't know how to describe it. Again, perhaps I'm just much more in a place of Zen, where I'm very centered of who I am. And that is reflected in how I bring myself to work, how I bring myself to my relationship. But I'm also very free at the same time. It's different than anywhere else I've been, I guess.
How do you handle work differently now, would you say?
Well, I can easily say that I allowed work to become too much of a driving force in my life. I'm ashamed at some of the choices potentially I made, just of where I needed to be, when I needed to be. And I gave so much of myself away in the process. I'd have to choose exercise or sleep. I have to book bio breaks on my calendar to go to the bathroom. I'm ashamed of that. I'm ashamed that I allowed that to be. And part of that is a self-importance that's not realistic, right? I don't need to be in every conversation. I need to prioritize me. I'm human. So, and that's different. I mean, I definitely... and perhaps have it a bit more arm's length, but I don't feel as though that is come at a cost to my performance.
That's cool.
So that's the difference. Whereas if you would have asked me before, I probably would have, my perception would have been that it definitely would have been a cost to performance.
That's a very interesting guess. Yeah.
Well, and I think that maybe, well, I'd be actually really interested to hear from you, Dana, what about Ula you think it was that gave you that place? Like, do you think it was the people, or is it the music? Like, what do you think it is about Ula that helped with your healing?
Yeah, that's so, and such an interesting answer. So of course, my wonderful sisters in Teton Valley, I have to attribute to the who always, you know, welcome with open arms, whether or not you're, and respected your need to have an emotional moment, right? That's a wonderful honor, and always there for you, but not trying to fix you, I guess. So for sure, that was a definite component, and you know, that it was scheduled and it was there, and you know, it was there for me, which was great. I definitely think this unraveling choreography that you do is amazing in terms of the release. There is some magic there, that's no question. And then for me personally, I definitely have this thing about music, always have. And so that combined with the love of movement and dance, you know, mm-hmm. there is just something magical about that. Even the synchronicity of moving with others, right? Yeah. I think there's such a power there. And, you know, even when we could get together physically, which thank goodness for a while we could, the crazy dance parties that we had. So Teton Valley has this box of sparkles and glitter and glamour that, you know, you put on a tutu or something else, where we could just be silly. And
that's amazing.
And there's magic in that.
Yeah.
That, you know, you, so.
Yeah. So I think about this a lot too, because it's like, there's almost, at least for, this is my experience, but with ULA people, when I meet someone who likes ULA, I immediately have a sense of trust, and also trust that I can be myself. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the, just that ULA attracts a certain person who, you know, I feel like ULA people, I feel like we as a community, we really want to be seen for who we are. And there's something about all of us that is just like, maybe felt like we didn't totally fit in all other areas of our life. And there's something about ULA where we feel like I can be me in this space. And when we all enter a space that we kind of, I always call it, it's the ULA secret handshake. It's like, we don't even have to do it, but there's this like secret agreement that it's, you know, it's like we're saying to each other, I'll be me if you be you. Mm-hmm. And then we all just kind of say, okay, let's just do it. Because that often feels like a brave and scary thing to do, is just walk into a space where you aren't trying to figure out what people want from you, or aren't trying to figure out the culture that you're supposed to fit into, or what are people going to think if I, you know, if I go this way when they all go that way. That's, you know, literally and figuratively. But there's something about an ULA space, at least for me, where I kind of understand that everybody who's in there is, we're all in agreement. We've all kind of come to this space saying, I'm just going to be me. Mm-hmm. And there's incredible freedom and healing and safety and trust in that for me. And I feel that when we feel safe, we can experiment, we can play, we can get in touch with our parts that normally we have to hide. We can experiment. We can free things, we can unlock things. And, you know, I don't know, I think it is a combination of the community because of who ULA naturally attracts. And then, yeah, there's, you know, the choreography that Bernice and I do and the music, I think it all comes together to create something that's really special. But, you know, I think that there's a magic to it that none of us, you know, maybe can put our finger on exactly what it is. But I think this attraction of everyone who does ULA coming together, there's just something really special about that. And I'm just so grateful for the ULA community. You know, I've never had a place like this in my life. Never, ever have I had a place where I've been able to be this free before.
It's funny you say inclusivity, because that was my deep-seated insecurity, was the fact that I have felt my entire life like a misfit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So much so that recently I reconnected with a friend that I had in elementary school on Facebook, and I had totally forgotten that when I was 6 years old, I used to tell these stories walking to school about how I was adopted. And of course, I was a kid with a great imagination, so I'm sure these stories were wild fun. But that was the one I had to attack. And I literally worked with a therapist who was like, tortured me through that I'm a misfit. So what? I'm a misfit. Mm-hmm. And I let go of all the bullying that I had in school, all the fact that even in high school, I was not, didn't fit. I probably was mm-hmm. better in college, where I kind of came into my own. But even in, I think I'm an introvert, and I am pretty good in front of an audience, right? I can be a speaker. I'm pretty good in small, you know, one and two. But if I had to walk up, you know, my biggest fear is like a social engagement where I have to do a mixer in a room and walk up to small groups. And I just am amazingly awkward. I'm just terrible.
Yeah.
And so I literally had to let that go. So now I can honestly say post-therapy, I'm a misfit. I don't fit. I have never fit my entire life. And maybe you're right. Maybe that handshake agreement that Ula is a group of misfits is a beautiful thing, right? You're right. I felt like I had found my home. And that's probably true.
Yeah. We actually used to call Ula the island of misfit toys.
Yep.
And I actually wonder how many people actually, if they really tuned in with themselves, do feel like a misfit, you know? Yeah. I think probably most of us would, but
yes,
but there, you know, it's not cool to say that, yeah, I don't fit in here. We spent our whole lives trying to figure out how to fit in, how to keep up, how to you know, be accepted into different groups. And so I think that's a really brave thing to say, is I'm a misfit.
Yeah.
But just even speaking that aloud, I think, is what then gives the gift of permission to other people to then also say, I actually am a misfit too. Like, I actually have been, you know, sacrificing myself in order to fit into this place because I wanted to fit in. Not that I necessarily did fit in, but I felt like I needed to in order to belong.
Yes. And that was my aha about, you know, giving pieces of myself away and becoming something that I just wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And the beauty of Ula just sort of, I mean, I was just hearing you guys talk about, it does give people a sense of home, a sense of belonging, a sense that you're of this earth, tethered to this place with these humans. And maybe that's one of the best things, because it gives you a sense of like, oh, then you have the freedom to kind of find, explore your vulnerabilities, explore your strengths, explore the things that are working for you and the things perhaps that aren't working for you. Because sometimes we're just like you talked about, Kaylee, too, how we just end up on the rat wheel. You know, we're just spinning it and spinning it and spinning it. And then suddenly you look up and you're like, whoa, where'd everybody go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are so many people who say that they've found their best friends through Ula. Yeah. And I think that there is that element, because we're connecting on deep and true places within ourselves.
Yeah.
And we know that that connection is genuine, because it is from a more true place. I even saw a Facebook post the other day from someone, and she's like, you know, like, tell me how you know me. And everyone was like, well, I am reiterating saying this, but through Ula. And because it's like, I do think that people feel they can trust the connection, because they also know how much skin in the game they have, because they're showing up so vulnerable. And so I think we can just trust that. I mean, even with these podcasts and stuff, sometimes people will say to me like, why do you share so much about yours? Like, how do you even feel okay to, you know, I share a lot of shit about myself, but it's because I just feel safe to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, well, if you judge me for it, like, I mean, I don't know what the consequence is. I don't really care, actually. Like, you know, maybe you don't like Ula anymore. Well, that's, you know, but like, whatever. And so to have these safe spaces where we can feel how this feels, I do hope that then, you know, maybe people can experience it in Ula, and then maybe bring some of it to their workplace, or bring some of it to a challenging relationship, or bring some of that. I always feel like, actually, I was talking to Bernice yesterday, and I was really upset, you know, just with this recent hate crime in Atlanta. And I was just, you know, teaching through my Ula One class, and as I'm doing cues like engage your core and shoulders back, you know, I was just thinking to myself, like, there are so many problems in the world. Like, how am I, what am I doing right? Like, how is any of this that I'm doing right now helping in any way to solve this problem, you know, to solve these big, huge problems? And Bernice just said something really great is she said, you may not be able, I was like, it's like the people who need it and the people who are need like, you know, that young man, like he is deeply, deeply, deeply troubled. I'm making no excuses for him and his actions, but it's like, I don't know. I just felt like, am I even doing work that needs to be done in the world? But Bernice made a really good point. She just said, yeah, but you don't know who you are affecting and then what impact they have in their lives, in their, you know, workplaces or whatever. And that just helped me understand that, like, you know, sometimes something like a dance class can actually be impactful in ways that you just don't see. And so it is, you know, it's cool to hear the stories that, you know, Dana Ula gave you a place that you could process and heal and become that phoenix. And now you're doing this, like, really incredible work for different companies around the world, you know, like that is huge. And so it helps me realize that maybe, yeah, dancing for an hour isn't going to change the world, but my God, the people who do Ula, they can change the world.
They can, and they do.
Yes, and you're getting them. You know, you're getting them to really reconnect with their light, and through that light, connect with others' light, and that's not to be underestimated by any means. Especially when your majority of we're talking about women here. Don't underestimate that group.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's like full circle with you, Dana. You know, it's a great example of how, you know, you ended up connecting with us, but you took this little ULA class in Teton Valley, you know, in the midst of a crisis, essentially, in your own life, and you let it sort of take over you, sort of give you a place to be. You let it express your vulnerability, and then you found your own strength in that vulnerability, and then you can share it with others in the workplace as people are struggling, as companies are struggling to find what is the magic to make this place more productive.
Yeah, but I mean, that's it. And what can we do to just, I mean, just the same reason that I wrote my book is the same reason you all are doing the work you're doing. If you can have a positive impact on one person, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, and I think that is so important. I think that's so important to remember. And it's also, I think, important for us to give ourselves grace when we get caught up in the other, you know, because as a business owner, you know, I constantly get down on myself. And, you know, Bernice and I are like, oh, and then we're lost all these instructors and we're not growing and blah, 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 blah. But that is the mindset that we actually aren't, that's what we're trying to get away from, is that our value is our growth or our productivity, or to be like, oh, look, we have 1 million followers on Instagram. You know, it's like, is that actually going to make me feel like I'm a good person and I'm doing valuable work? You know, it's, so I have to check myself constantly, because I think we don't even know in all of the ways that it's just like subconsciously showing up for us, that I will be I will be considered a better person if I'm able to do all of this, or I will be more valuable, or so-and-so will be more proud of me, or I will get more respect, you know, whatever. If we hit all these goals and all this productivity, like I feel it in myself all the time. So you're right. It's such a good reminder to say, no, that's actually not what you believe. You actually do believe that if you can change one person's life, you know, if you can help somebody through one situation, that matters. And so it's just a good reminder how often I have to change my own narrative, even about the work that I do, which is trying to send a different message. So it's fascinating. It's just fascinating to me how it's so ingrained, even where I'm not realizing it and where I don't want it to be. It's there. Yes.
Culturally ingrained.
It is. Especially, I think, with women, because we're constantly looking at what we can do better. You know, part of the work that I did when I wrote Grace Meets Grit was finding that women measure their competence instead of confidence, you know, and they will over index on competence. And so they will say, you know, well, I can't do that because I need X, Y, and Z first. And I did this for years, you know, why won't you apply? I think you'd make a great CEO. Well, I need X, Y, and Z first.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't. And by the way, the world runs on confidence. And
yeah, so, it's so true.
Just get out there and do it. And do, I think for, especially for women, do something that scares the shit out of you.
Right.
Because that's how you'll grow.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's a great message.
Well, and again, just generalizing gender, but it seems like men just have a more natural confidence about them than women do?
I don't know that they actually have it as much as it's culturally ingrained.
Yeah, from early on.
It is, because if you look at even how girls play, you know, and generally speaking, and certainly sports have changed this somewhat, but in smaller groups, and it's about relationships, and, you know, that's how you played, you know, whereas men play with an outcome, and it's about winning or losing. And a lot of winning or losing is based on how you display that winning or losing, right? It's basically the manifestation of confidence. And so it is deeply ingrained. Although I think, you know, we all have this to face societally as well, as that the unreasonable expectation that we place on men, we're seeing that manifest itself in many ways. And we need to change as well, even with young boys.
For sure.
Especially about suppressing emotions, right?
Oh, yeah.
I see them
coming to ULA. Like, it was funny the other, you know, like it's, but, you know, if I tell another man, like, you should go to ULA, they're like, oh no, I don't need to express my emotions. Exactly. And I'm like, well, actually you do.
You're human.
Yeah.
You're human.
You're not a robot.
Yes.
No, and I think that brings up a really good point, Dana. Like, men, and this is why I tried to bring up that the difference between masculine energy and feminine energy. Mm-hmm. We have to let men also be in touch and invite more feminine energy into the way that they lead, into the way that they, you know, just even go about their lives. Like, it's, I think that more women leaders, it's very important. But I also think that men are really great leaders naturally, but to allow them to invite more of their own feminine energy into that role, I think that could change so much. You know, I'm not a male, so I don't know how this feels, but it seems like there's not also a lot of tolerance for men to have that femininity in their approach to leadership.
Mm-mm. I have had, after giving a Grace Meets Grit talk, I have had men come up to me and say that exact same. They will come up and say, you know, I'm that rare man who has more of a Grace style. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You think you feel like a fish out of water. Man, do I feel like a fish out of water.
Right.
So that is exactly what you're saying. And same is true. Like I mentioned, I'm more of a, probably more of a grit style, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And that can be perceived negatively as well. But what if we just drop all that shit and just try to say, how do we leverage the strengths that we all have? You know, the lens that I've put on with gender is just one lens. We all have style differences.
Right, we all have
background and cultural differences. Mm-hmm. And if we just look at that as, but I think the key is that that's hard work. It's hard work to come together in a very diverse group versus if you have people that are all alike and they can shorthand everything, it's not a lot of work. But you get a lot of groupthink and you don't have a lot of innovative thinking. But that's the trade-off.
Yeah.
Good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're so lucky you're doing the work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you. And I'm so lucky that you're doing the work you're doing.
And we're super excited because you're going to be presenting at ULABration as well.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm so excited for ULABration. I get my vaccine on Tuesday.
Yay.
We're so excited to have you, and you're just going to be a great addition to the whole gathering.
It's my birthday, too.
Are you serious? What day?
August 8th.
On the 8th? Oh, yay. Well, it's just funny. We were talking about this the other day, but, you know, it's just wild that we've never actually met.
No, we haven't met.
Oh, no.
It's going to be fun, but I also
so funny. You were modeling ULA clothes the other day, and someone said, how tall is the model? And you said 5'8", and I'm like, oh, I knew kind of Bernice that you were tall, and I was like, how tall is Kaylee? Because, you know, I don't have a physical sensation of you, yeah, other yeah, than exactly. Zoom, which doesn't really reflect the full experience.
No, it doesn't. But I mean, and I guess that is one of the, you know, that is another silver lining of COVID, is that we have been kind of, the only way to have some of these relationships is, you know, is digitally. But when you connect from the heart, it doesn't really even matter what format it's in, because I honestly, Dana, I feel like I know you, you know, it still makes me giggle to think that we've never met in person, because I, you know, I've just loved our conversations that we've had. And so it is beautiful, just the power of connection and the power of, you know, a heart connection where there is, it can transcend like time and space and all of that. It's pretty amazing. I mean, humans are really incredible. I get so down about how nasty we are sometimes, but then, you know, there's so much beauty to us as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a positive side, the soul connection.
Yeah. The soul connection. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much. And I'm so grateful that you have, that you're just a part of this community. I'm so excited for everyone else to get to know you through this podcast and then at Liberation too. And yeah, it's just going to be so much fun to celebrate your birthday with you and have you here in Missoula. It's going to be so fun. I just have to talk for a minute, because we just totally redesigned Liberation. And I can't wait to just be at a hotel room with everyone and hang out and go to coffee and take classes and go to amazing workshops and dance at night. It's just going to be so much fun.
Yeah, we're going to be in downtown Missoula. It's totally cool little town, and we can walk everywhere and then go sit at the river and visit. And I don't know. It's just, I'm really happy about this relocation. Can't wait. Yay. It's been an honor to talk to you, Dana. Really, it's always love talking to you. We learn something new every time. And for me, it's like, that's all I ask of my relationships, is like, please help me expand and help me grow. And you have been a huge part in that. So thank you.
Thanks, ditto. Same thing. I love to continue to learn, and you're opening my heart every day.
Yay. Well, we love you, Dana. And thanks everyone for listening. Hopefully you all have a great rest of your day.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.